this edition of the Generations Radio program, originally aired in 2016. For additional shows on hundreds of topics, search our archives at generations.org.
This is the Generations Radio broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. I'm a homeschooled father of five, raising our kids out here in the eastern plains of Colorado. Bill Jack, also with me today. We take a look at culture from a biblical perspective. Today I want to take a look at the latest release of Ben-Hur. They spent $100 million on that thing, Bill, and it has been a $100 million bomb. The first weekend it raked in $11 million, which is just a drop of the bucket when it comes to a price tag of $100 million. I think Kendrick Brothers did better than Ben-Hur with Courageous or The War Room. I think they did better. And $100 million on this thing, and there have been a lot of Christian organizations advertising it on their websites, and I know there are a lot of Christian churches and pastors behind this new release of Ben-Hur, the classic novel that was written in the 19th century. You know, it's been put into screenplay three times, I think. The first time was in the 1920s, and then there was the 1959 classic.
Yeah, it was a silent movie, I believe.
Yeah, it was, and then the 1959 classic, and then again, released just this last weekend, and they spent $100 million on this thing. I think the problem, Bill, I'm trying to analyze it. My wife and I went to see it last night, and both of us were not impressed with the story. I think it's a lack of depth. Personally, I think there's a lack of gravitas in modern entertainment, and Ben-Hur itself was a story that involved a great deal of gravitas, and the reasons why I think it lost gravitas, but the acting, the scripting, very shallow. The story itself, very shallow. It could be just a lack of expertise anymore, and the writers that are coming out of UCLA writing schools and, you know, whatever. But they're just $100 million of special effects just can't quite salvage the bad acting and the bad scripting.
Do you know how much the 1959 version cost?
Uh-uh.
$15 million.
Only $15 million, wow.
Yeah.
Well, this one costs $100 million to produce, and I think a lot of it is there's a lack of a sense of the fear of God, a lack of a sense of guilt, a lack of a sense of God, of the vertical. There's a sense of the horizontal, certainly as the message of forgiveness. That was huge, and we appreciated that message. But there's a lack of a sense of the vertical in modern man, and that includes the modern evangelical church. There just is the shallowness, because what adds depth to life, Bill, is there's got to be something more in the metaphysic than the material. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
There's got to be something more than just matter in motion. But the problem is most everybody has been educated in schools in which the textbooks hardly ever recognize God. So they've been living without God for, well, 50, 60, 70 years, and that includes homeschool graduates as well as Christian school graduates, as well as public school graduates. There's a little sense, a very, very little sense for the vertical, for God, for the existence of God, for the presence of God. There's little sense of purpose and meaning in life. There's little sense of love, of guilt, of fear. These sorts of things just are not reflected well by the actors because they're just unfamiliar with these concepts, Bill. I think that's it. Now, I don't know. Am I off base here? I think modern movies have become increasingly boring because they lack depth.
Yeah. That there's no basis anymore. There's no foundation. When the foundations are destroyed, what can the righteous do?
Well, a couple other points to make on the latest release of Ben-Hur. Before we take a break on the Generations program this morning, the final scene depicting forgiveness and reconciliation was nice, but again, it seemed very fake. Marcella had a complete turnaround without any backstory to it at all within 2 seconds. With almost no dialogue at all, suddenly they're hugging each other and everything's good. You know, that kind of stuff. So cheap, so shallow, so weak. And I think, again, a lack of the vertical. There's a sense of forgiving each other, but where's the forgiveness of God? Now, again, there's references to Jesus referring to his Father forgiving others, and there's something there. But without a sense of the vertical, without a sense of God, without a sense of sin, without a sense of guilt before God, redemption itself hardly takes any meaning in a motion picture like Ben-Hur. Also, the taking of God's name in vain seemed a little out of place for a Jew in the first century. Does that make sense?
Again, yeah.
That's imposing the modern
apostate, anti-God perspective into the first century. Yes, we are an extremely anti-God, blasphemous society that has apostatized against the true and living God, and therefore takes God's name in vain every 10 minutes, or every 5 minutes, or every 3 minutes. And so here is a first century Jew taking God's name in vain. And when that happens, Bill, again, what do you get? A sense of the shallowness, a sense of the blasphemy that's represented by modern culture.
You know, it's amazing. The guy who wrote Ben-Hur, the novel.
Yeah.
Is
Lew Wallace.
Lew Wallace.
Lew Wallace.
Do you know that he was also the governor of the state of New Mexico?
That's right. I remember that.
Yeah.
I remember that. That's right.
So at one point, you know, you had politics mixing with entertainment again,
mm-hmm.
but it was a good thing.
You know, it was a good book.
Yeah, it was
and
a great
it's a great story. It's a tremendous story. I think we're going to do a study guide, a junior high study guide on Ben-Hur as part of the Christian curriculum project in the next year or two. So stay tuned, friends. We're bringing Christian curriculum to the forefront for homeschools and Christian schools over the next 10 to 20 years as part of this ministry. But here's another issue that I want to bring out before we take the break. One of the differences between the Ben-Hur of the 1950s and the Ben-Hur just released last weekend was that the face of Jesus Christ was depicted. He gets more lines, but my wife made this comment. She said, you know what, by presenting him as they did in this film, it seemed like the power of his words and his persona was greatly diminished by the imaging of Christ in the way that they did it. I think that's interesting. I felt the same way. I just didn't sense the bigness, the presence of Jesus and the importance of his word in the entire backdrop of the movie as I did in the 1959 edition. It's also interesting that the Westminster Larger Catechism speaks to sins forbidden in the Second Commandment. Second Commandment is, thou shalt not make unto thee any graven image or any likeness of anything in the heaven above or the earth beneath. Thou shalt not bow down thyself to worship them, and so forth. So it's the commandment relating to images. Now listen to this. The sins forbidden in the Second Commandment are all devising, counseling, commanding, using, and anywise approving any religious worship not instituted by God himself, tolerating a false religion, the making of any representation of God, of any of the three persons, either inwardly in our mind or outwardly in any kind of image or likeness of any creature whatsoever, all worshiping of it, and so forth and so on. So it's interesting that that in times past there was amongst Protestants, amongst evangelicals, hesitation to present the image of Christ as is done these days.
In some of the older movies, whenever Christ was in the storyline, they would always avoid putting a face to him. He was filmed from the back. The character was filmed from the back, or there was no visual representation of Christ. And part of it was out of respect for that commandment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even in Hollywood at the time. I don't know what they did in the 1959 movie. I can't recall how they depicted Christ.
Well, you saw the feet. You sort of saw the hands.
Right.
Yeah. But I don't think you didn't see the face. That's right. All right. Well, we're going to take a break, and we're going to shift directions ever so slightly. But part of the movie depicted the Roman Games. And I want to come back to the Roman Games because I'm working on an eighth grade curriculum of world history and the history of the Christian church and the missionary movement that took over the world and has done this amazing work for the Church of Jesus Christ and for the kingdom of Jesus over 2,000 years. But I spent some time on the Roman Games because this is important. It's an important part of Western history and, of course, the end of the Roman Games. But it was interesting, the prefect's comment after the chariot race, as all of these people, the Jews and the Romans and everybody, is gathering around, they're shouting and screaming and so forth, the prefect's comment went like this: look at them, they want blood, they're all Romans now. That was the end of the chariot race as presented by the prefect. I think it's Pontius Pilate. Be back in just a moment with more on the Generations broadcast.
It's hard to imagine Christian pastors going to jail for their faith, and it's just as hard to imagine Christian businessmen fined $135,000 for not baking a cake in celebration of a homosexual wedding. It's hard to imagine America turning into a communist state that persecutes Christians and rewards the most aberrant. Will Christians just let it happen? Should Christians just let it happen? These are important questions, my friends. This is Kevin Swanson, and I wrote the book on freedom because I wanted to build a case for freedom. A biblical case. A historical case. And let me tell you, the history of freedom is the most inspiring story you'll ever read. Have you heard the story of the Magna Carta, Bannockburn, Leyden, and William the Silent? The American Pilgrims at the Battle for King's Mountain. How will we fight for freedom in this generation and the next? Well, tell the story first. The story of freedom. Let's leave a legacy for freedom for our children and our grandchildren. Get a copy of the new book, Freedom for Each of Your Children and Grandchildren, at generations.org. That's generations.org.
Back on the Generations Radio Broadcast. Kevin Swanson here with you, and we reviewed a little bit of the recent release of the remake of Ben-Hur that was released over the weekend, the $100 million bomb that just hit the box office. Could be Walmart and Sam's Club will relieve the budgets ever so slightly for the $100 million price tag for the DVDs, but we'll see how that goes. Well, one of the points that was made, and I think this was a big part of the Ben-Hur remakes, is the chariot race and the games. It's probably the most spectacular element of the film. Probably used up $80 million of the $100 million budget to produce that. It was an amazing picture of the way life was in the old Roman world. So we're going to visit this just for a little bit on this segment of the program. And part of the reason I'm coming back to this is because I've been working on an 8th grade world history / history of missions over 2,000 years for the Church of Jesus Christ for 8th graders, because we're trying to bring back a Christ-centered view of all of world history instead of presenting the empire worldview, which is really the way world history is presented by most of the curriculum I've ever read. So we're bringing a Jesus-centric approach, but we also describe what was going on in the world at that time. And here's what I wrote for 8th graders relating to what was going on in the Roman world. The games were a big part of Roman life. And this is another example of what the world looked like without the influence of Jesus. Words cannot express the horrible degrading of human life that went on in these terrible games. The blood of thousands of poor victims soaked the sands of the Colosseum, and it wasn't just the Colosseum in Rome that conducted the games. At least 230 amphitheaters have been discovered in ancient cities around the old Roman world. Up to 3,000 men would fight mock battles, floating in boats in a Colosseum filled with water, to the bloodlust excitement of the spectators. Another staged battle in a nearby lake involved 19,000 combatants at one time. The first gladiatorial competition, where men fought each other to the death before a live crowd, took place in B.C. 264. To commemorate the death of his father, Julius Caesar held a competition involving 640 gladiators. Animals were killed by the thousands, and animals killed their thousands. The Roman historian Cicero reports that one lion killed at least 200 men in the arena. Life was cheap in Rome. End quote. So that comes from our curriculum we're providing for 8th graders in order that they understand what Jesus accomplished. And then, of course, we tell the story of Telemachus. Telemachus was the wonderful Christian man that ran up into the Colosseum, dropped into the amphitheater, and began to preach against it, saying, stop the madness, stop the killing, stop the madness, stop the madness. And, of course, he was killed for his pains. But it was shortly after that, in the beginning of the 5th century, that the Roman Caesar stopped the games, and we haven't seen the games since. And that's an indication of the powerful influence of Jesus Christ upon those Roman games. Now, again, it took a number of years, almost 400 years, to bring those games to an end.
But the constant, steady pressure of the Telemachuses and the disciples of Jesus over a period of 400 years yielded tremendous influence. And, of course, I bring up the issue of abortion. Abortion and infanticide were pretty much done away with by 375 A.D., thanks to the influence of Christians across the entire Roman Empire. Bring up many of these examples for our 8th grade students, such that they understand that Jesus Christ is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. He's accomplished some major things in human history. And yes, of course, we've rebelled in America in 1973, 1,600 years after abortion was eliminated, almost exactly 1,600 years after it was eliminated in the Roman Empire, almost to the date, 1,600 years later, America legalized abortion in 1973 as a result of Roe v. Wade decision. So the point is that 1,600 years, Jesus Christ had huge influence. Too bad that Christians have backed away from involvement in the political state over just the last 30, 40 years. It's, of course, a bit of a shame to the name of Jesus that these secular governments have accomplished so many wicked things. But the point is, point being that Christians had a huge influence back then, Bill. And I think the cheapness of life was something we're starting to see come back, but it certainly represented Roman life at that time.
You know, and the case is that there's a very thin veneer of civilization.
Yeah.
And once you peel the veneer off, you've got trash wood underneath most
of
the days, right?
You got it.
And the case is that we need to rebuild the furniture in the room using solid wood, not the cheap wood that you put a thin veneer of civilization over. And men like William Wilberforce and John Newton brought an end to slavery when it was the oil of the day.
Yeah.
Okay? It fueled the economy of England. And you have a handful of men like Newton, men like Wilberforce, who were willing to stand and speak, or Wilberforce and John Newton, men who were willing to stand and speak against an evil of the day, and they brought an end to it. They brought it to its knees simply by proclaiming the truth of the gospel of Jesus Christ. The gospel is not just, hey, you get to go to heaven. The gospel is you are now introduced to a new way of living here and throughout eternity.
Amen. 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 You know, these materialistic and rich empires like Rome and America will eventually cheapen life. And they do it because they're living for themselves and because of sin and sinful nature that lies in the hearts of men. Are we moving back towards the Roman games? Bill, I'm going to interact with this question over the last 8 minutes of our program today. I have suggested this before on the radio program that I can see in the near future a reality game where somebody produces a reality game where there is a hunt on an island that is not under the jurisdiction of a country that cares. And guess who they're going to hunt?
They're going to hunt people.
That's right.
You know, that is the basis for a very popular short story that was in many anthologies that are used in public schools. It's called The Most Dangerous Game by Richard Connell. And it was back in the early 1900s that he wrote this. And it's that very premise. And the premise is that there is a hunt on an island not of freedom,
mm-hmm.
but an island, and the hunt is conducted by a Cossack, and it's for not animals, not trophies, but for humans.
That's right, and I think we're heading that direction, my friends. Why? Well, because Roe v. Wade of 1973. I mean, come on, guys. The Western world has found that modern life is cheap, and the survival of the fittest, the evolutionary concept that Charles Darwin left with us, really puts the whole matter of life in the balance, and we are no longer subjecting ourselves to God's law, that is, thou shalt not murder, and that human life is very special because it's made in the image of God. Now, see, these basic metaphysical concepts and ethical concepts, when we jettison these from the foundations, you can bet your life that as long as modern society is moving away from God's laws and the concept that man is made in the image of God, that we're moving towards reality shows in which live humans will be hunted on an island accessible on a pay-per-view. Yeah, of course, it'll be about $100 pay-per-view, and it will be on an island that's not under the jurisdiction of the country that cares. Friends, this is the near future as I see it right now. You say, why? Well, here's one reason that I think we can say we're moving in this direction. Cage fighting and mixed martial arts are growing fast. It is the most violent sport in America right now, and according to a recent report, MMA is second only to adventure racing when it comes to growth in participation, recorded a 19.5% increase since 2013. Almost every other sport has lost fans over the last 3 years. The NBA, the NFL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, they're losing fans. They've lost 3, 4, 5, 6%. But MMA is on the increase. And, of course, women's MMA is also on the increase big time as well. Introduced just back in 2012, but now growing and growing and growing. As of April 2014, there have been 4 recorded deaths resulting from sanctioned contests in MMA. Researchers also studied post-fight medical data of 1,181 MMA fighters, and it turns out between 2003 and 2013, 59.4% of MMA fighters suffered some form of injury during the bout. That's 60% of MMA fighters suffered some form of injury during their bout, and that compares to 49% for boxing. So it's the most dangerous sport. And I was watching some guy who had his little computer there on a flight. He was on the left side of me across the aisle, and I could see some of that cage fighting going on. In every case, man, there was blood splashing all over the place, and the crowds were going mad, the bloodlust in the crowd going nuts. Friends, this is the kind of thing that's coming back. I think Christians just need to acknowledge. I realize there are many Christians drawn into this kind of stuff, because Christians are increasingly drawn to whatever the world's doing anyway.
You know, it's really fascinating that when I was growing up in the 50s, there was, you know, pro wrestling. And everybody knew that there was a lot of fakery to it. Yeah. That there was a lot of, you know, just showmanship.
Yeah.
And even, you know, WWF or WWE wrestling was like that recently. But now we've moved away from that because now we want to see real blood.
That's right.
We want to see real broken bones. We want to see real pain. We want to see real pummeling.
They're tired of Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone taking the hits and all that fake blood that splashed on them from the movie directors. They're tired of that. Come on, they want some real blood. This is real bloodlust. This is the Roman Colosseum coming back. We want to get onto the island and see somebody shot in the face in real life. This is the direction that modern society is moving, friends, much like the ancient Romans. And let me draw in the Westminster Larger Catechism again on the sins forbidden in the Sixth Commandment. That thou shalt not murder. The sins forbidden in the Sixth Commandment are all taking away the life of ourselves or of others, except in the case of public justice, lawful war, necessary defense, the neglecting or withdrawing the lawful and necessary means of preservation of life. Sinful anger, hatred, envy, desire for revenge, all excessive passions, distracting cares, immoderate use of meat, drink, labor, and recreations, provoking words, oppression, quarreling, striking, wounding, and whatsoever else tends to the destruction of the life of any person. Wow, I wonder if some of that's happening in modern sports, as it happened in the Colosseums and the amphitheaters across the Roman Empire.
You know, it's interesting, in this very popular short story, The Dangerous, Most Dangerous Game, the reason that the general, who is the Cossack, who is hunting humans, justifies his bloodlust with his latest victim is because of the wars that have recently occurred. World War II, World War I. He said, you know, life is cheap. And that's what we're seeing again. Once again, you know, after you're inundated with the fake bloodlust, then you get a taste for real blood.
Well, and that's when the great empires begin to engage in their major, major wars. They set a bad example for all the rest, of course, including those who are involved in the games. All right. So, yes, we are certainly seeing a degradation of human life in the 20th century, the 21st century. As Christians, come out from among them. Be separate, saith the Lord. Come out from among them. Be separate, saith the Lord. Let's not give way to these. Last night I was just reading the account Augustine had in his Confessions about his friend Alypius and how he was drawn into the games. Very interesting. It's easy for Christians to be drawn into the bloodlust, friends, but let's come out from among them, be separate, saith the Lord. I encourage you to my book, The Tattooed Jesus. that talks about much of this culture, including an excessive treatment of the Hunger Games. Be sure to get a copy of The Tattooed Jesus, our book on culture, my friends. The Tattooed Jesus, What Would the Real Jesus Say About Popular Culture? Get a copy of that book at generations.org. That's generations.org or kevinswanson.com. This is Kevin Swanson and Bill Jack in studio, and we invite you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.